I don't think we've ever done a Monday, and
It's not gonna be good.
I'm a little beat up. Mondays are a little more strenuous for me at work.
Not for me, but I work tomorrow, so I have like pre-work brain, so I'm like not happy. I'm like, ugh.
Well, I hope we get used to this Monday thing because 2 weeks from now I have to do it on a Monday.
That's fine. You know what? Game on.
Game has to be on. I feel like we've gotten our outtake.
Oh no. Don't let the feel like we got our outtake thing in the outtake. That's
I
one
kind of
thing I want
just,
to make sure we stop doing.
yeah, maybe next time.
No, this isn't the outtake. Stop doing that. This isn't the outtake. God damn. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton,
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights.
Welcome, everybody. Episode 77. I am Rob.
Colton, stop that.
I'm trying to be professional. Why are you pushing? Hey, everybody. Today we're going to be discussing the 2012 release from First Aid Kit, produced by Mike Mogus.
You're doing this to mess with me now. What's it called?
The Lion's Roar. Thank you.
Are you okay with them getting on the Default Americans Lion?
We kind of got on their train. And honestly, Voldemort, my bandmate, everybody, he was the one who was just so heart set on the lion's mouth. But that's based off of the Steven Spielberg movie. What was the one where it's like about him growing up? I can't remember what it's called.
Hook?
No, it's about him growing up.
Yeah, like, oh, Fablemans, the Fablemans.
Yeah, the Fablemans. To where there's like this line where he goes like, you got to put your head in the lion's mouth. Something
oh, wow,
like that.
That was good. I don't even know who I was supposed to be.
That's my Judd Hirsch impression.
Man.
Hey, everybody. Well, welcome to arguably what's more than likely going to be our shortest first and third segments. Because here we are on a Monday.
This is one of those, like, we've done Tuesdays, and those have been bad. We've done Wednesdays. That's been terrible.
Yeah. Our Sundays are not that great, but we like to think that that's our best.
Yeah, so let's see. Monday at 6:20. Let's see who we're working with. See if we're cooking with gas.
We are working people.
Did you watch the Super Bowl? I know you did.
I caught like maybe a little bit of the fourth. I actually went out and I saw a good friend of ours, a listener to the pod. I went and hung out with my buddy Miller.
Oh.
Who we may have some things in the works with him.
I think I'm aware of some of those things. Does it involve a certain tabletop? Like,
it does. It does.
Okay. Let's just leave it at that. It's a tease in the industry.
Based off of the conversation I had with him, it should be pretty damn fun.
It should
be pretty fun. But no, I didn't really watch it. I'm hoping that your lovely wife felt really good about it.
She's very excited. She wore her Seahawks jersey all last night and this morning. It was very good. You didn't see the Bad Bunny halftime show?
I didn't, and I kind of wanted to.
It was, I mean, here's my stance, which is I'm not like a Bad Bunny guy, but
same.
No, it was I think the halftime show is an idea I've never cared about, and I still don't. Like, and
in general, I'm with you. Yeah.
And I tend to like, the Kendrick Lamar one last year, it should have been right up my alley, and I think
I was intrigued by it, and I watched it. Oddly enough, the one that I was the most intrigued by was The Weeknd, because I really love what's the album, Starboy. I love that album, but I just didn't see how he was going to pull it off. I just didn't think he was the right guy for the Super Bowl halftime. And you know what? I think he wasn't.
It was all like, there's just a certain level of spectacle to like halftime shows that I've never really been like, oh wow. And
what are you talking? When we were in My Friend Sam, you weren't dreaming of doing the halftime show?
I probably was. But I did enjoy I mean, for it not being really a show, it was more of a music video, but it was a good music video. I liked it. And
from everything I heard, Yeah, from everything I heard, it was kind of like a party. Like, what was the quote that I heard that I really liked? It was a
It's like the only thing more powerful than hate is love. That was the quote put at the back.
That is very touching, but that's not quite the one. I think it was like, you know, like partying for peace or something like that. Or I was just like, yeah, all right, I can get. But
oh, that's a nice one.
Something like that. I'm butchering it, but
I need to be on record for this podcast now. This has been a what episode are we on again, my friend?
77.
77. I would say if you've been keeping track of this podcast, there's a number of episodes where you could call back attention and be like, hey, let's bring this up for Colton. Look at his past allegiances, you might say. Mm-hmm. I am officially declaring I turn in all of my Kid Rock stock from when I was in fifth
Good.
Grade. I was in fifth grade.
You were in fifth grade. It's fine. Yeah.
And here's the thing. Okay. One thing. There are some things on Devil Without a Cause that I still sing when I'm bored because it's been imprinted in my brain.
Sure.
But I turn in all that stock. It's all returned.
You know, a month ago, I talked so much shit about a particular song, and I swear it keeps popping in my head. The Formats, I Love just keeps creeping in, and all of a sudden I'm just saying, I love. Stop, Rob. Stop. You commit.
I actually, there is a song that we are about to talk about in the second segment that I actually used the word to no one. I was by myself and I said to myself, I hate this song. Like,
I'm intrigued.
Genuine, like, there's some, okay, here's the, I need to get out ahead of something before the second segment hits.
Uh-huh.
I'm a good person. I'm a good person.
He is, everybody. This podcast is not going to be your first point of evidence.
I feel very like, there are things that happened over the last couple of days preparing for this episode where I actually had to look myself in the mirror and be like, who are you, man? Like, who are you? What are you doing? What's your life about? I'm going to preface before we get rolling. I'm going to save for the second session, but I have what is, I think, my thesis statement for this album and what the second segment's going to be. But I think it's better saved for after the break.
I want to be surprised if we're somewhere close to each other. Because as I conveyed to Colton before we welcomed, I had never really listened to this album front to back myself. So I ran into some things, and there might have been a little bit of your voice saying 2 minutes into this, I'm already calling mid, which I'm not giving anything away. He said this last episode.
That was my in the moment, like in process. Yeah. And for the record, I had only heard the first two songs. So I think I'd heard the first song.
The first 2 minutes of the first song is what you told.
That's right. That's right.
The listener.
And the listener went, okay, bro. All right. Man.
Wow. All right. That's exactly what I said. but no, I think it's going to be interesting. At the very least, we got a conversation ahead of us. And if it's bad, it's Monday.
2026 is already shaping to be a year of firsts for this podcast. I think we have a couple things on the, I don't feel like we're just teasing everything. We got a couple things that
why not?
We're both looking at each other wide-eyed going, I don't think we should do this. And yet we're going to do most
we're
of
going
them.
For it. Work. And hopefully you guys will keep coming back.
Well, I think let's let the Blamley take us away and let us we're just going to dive in. We're going to just have a ton of fun.
That's right.
No one's going to be resentful. No one's going to hate me. Please take it away.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball and Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of the Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball and Entertainment podcast.
Man, let's not do this anymore.
Yeah.
Please say welcome back.
Welcome back, everybody.
The conversation we just had before we started again would be what I would call haunting. It was bad.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that way to line me up for the rest of the week. All right.
So here's, I want to set you up for a sec to walk me through this. I think you gave some kind of intro when we were first getting to like what this episode was going to be on. Mm-hmm. But why First Aid Kit and why this album? Because they have a couple. And why was it this one?
This album is the one I'm most familiar with. I kind of wanted to go a little bit of folk with it. And
go folk with it, man.
I wanted to get folky. I could have came up with something better there on a Sunday. On a Sunday, I could have.
Sunday, but, bro. It's Monday.
It is Monday. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Oh.
I would have been
so well. This is
man,
great.
Mondays. Yeah, it just seemed like a cool idea. I wasn't sure if you were familiar with them, and I just thought, hey, let's talk about them.
This is likely up there on the bands that people expect me to be familiar with, and I'm not.
And I am a guilty party in this.
And yes, weirdly enough, I think the other band that people expect me to be familiar with is Fleet Foxes, which is the band that this band got famous for covering on YouTube.
It's very true. I like a Fleet Foxes song.
Can I quickly say something? That whole story, like the fact that they got like famous for doing a YouTube cover of a Fleet Foxes song, I hate every part of that.
I don't think it's entirely fair, though. They got more of an international fame. They were already handling it in Sweden. By the way, everybody, they are from Sweden.
The like reading all of, like from the Lion's Roar only, just that one record, like hearing all the awards and things, like they swept in Sweden like that. Like my only thought was, what came out in Sweden that year? What else?
I don't want to be disrespectful to our Swedish, our Scandinavian brethren, but I'm going what, ABBA? Like I'm just thinking, like, who are the big...
Oh, you're talking in general.
Who are the big Scandinavian...
Well, ABBA's at the top, and I don't think that's... I mean, I think they're pretty proud, and they should be. ABBA's fantastic.
But at the same time, what's the competition here?
Oh, I kept trying to think of the Tallest Man on Earth, I think, was releasing records around this time. But I don't know where they're... Maybe they're, like, the competition. They're not, like, on each other's records. But
reading the Wikipedia, I was like, whoa, they swept the Grammys. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, that's Grammys?
We had the same exact thing where I was like, there's no way that they swept... Oh, never mind. No, it's...
This is a different
Swedish Grammys.
Yeah, the Swedish Grammys. All right.
So what my whole thing is what is the name of our show? The name of our show is Know Your Rights. We are
very
a
good.
And I don't know why it took me 77 episodes to talk about this, I guess. We have a podcast that focuses on songwriting. We are both songwriters. We love songwriting. We love
absolutely
intricacies of the decisions that you make when you're trying to craft something that other people are going to love. You want to express things about yourself. We are not Know Your Vocals. If this podcast was called Know Your Vocals, and if this podcast was called Know Your Ability to Harmonize with Your Sibling, this would be a very different episode.
I feel like, but our title already is implying that we're supposed to understand that, especially for this episode.
I just want to get that out there, because what I found in this album and listening to it was there's always the, it's funny enough what I remember telling you about Andy Hull, which is like when you are a really great singer, even though so much reverb so at certain songs, I'm like, it sounds like she's in the bottom of a well trying to call up to help people,
which I kind of like. But it is funny you're bringing up Andy Hull, because that is who I was thinking of throughout this album. There's a difference between them. I'm not sure who I think are the better lyricists.
That's quite a duel. That's the thing, right? Is the vocals being what they are the thing. They are the defining instrument on this album. Like, there are some cool little things, right? I know we're gonna get to like Lap Steel. I know on Emmy Lou and things, like there's some stuff that I find really cool, and it's a Mike Mogus record, so Of course, there's trumpets. At least once.
Especially on something you would expect from Mogus.
That's going to be a fun thing to end it on. But overall, the vocals being what they are, they just do not. One is I'm never going to care that much about vocals anyway. I'm never going to like a band because of vocals, like ever. I don't think I've ever done that.
Well, and that's an interesting like mentality to have, because I can think of most people I would think that I would like try to introduce music to. I would be very conscious of who the vocalist is. I have people in my life that I would never show. I hate to drag you back here, Jeff Rickley. I would never show Thursday.
Leave him alone, man.
Because they're not going to like his vocal sound, because it's just like, it's not this obvious, pretty voice for what I think. Sometimes I think people have a much more obvious approach to music. So I get where you're coming from. I'm not trying to put you above the listener, but there are just times where you're a lot more thoughtful of what you think makes a great song, as opposed to it's like, yeah, it just sounds pretty. Which there are going to be plenty of times this episode where I say, I think it just sounds pretty.
And by the way, listener, I'm in the pit with you. I swear, I'm not down. I feel like I'm like up in the opera booth with my little glasses, going, oh, what are they listening?
If only
to
you guys
there?
Could see him right now.
I'm miming the opera glasses with my hand. I knew that, and I know there are going to be songs where that is your stance. And there's nothing to say about that other than I do not think they are good songwriters. And there are, and I can't
think really of my, ahead of ourselves.
No, I'm just saying it. Like, there are songs on this record that really bum me out. But there are times where I see stuff and I'm like, I see that there's cool stuff there. And what I didn't do that I actually wanted to do, and I didn't get to do it, I didn't get to listen to later records, because I know this is the second album.
Yes.
And although I did hear enough chatter telling like fans of like more recent albums going, they really lost it after The Lion's Roar. And that did tell me, like, what do they lose?
And it's such an intriguing thought, because I'm like, I can't tell. I'm like, does that mean that they weren't? Because I haven't listened to later records either. Yeah. I'm like, does that mean that on the later records, did they try to be more commercial? Or did they try to be more avant-garde? What is the thing, like, which way did they take it to where fans are going like, oh, I miss the good old days? Or I'm like, I feel like they could have gone one way or the other and possibly been like, you're losing the sound that we fell in love with.
I remember when we talked about the Bright Eyes episode, we talked about like Casadega, but even before that, right? And we talked about Wide Awake, It's Morning. I brought up that there are like some songs on I'm Wide Awake where I kept thinking, man, this doesn't hit the same. And it feels very like cowboy cosplay, right? Was the phrase I used. And
it's a great phrase.
There are moments throughout this record where I had a very similar feeling. And I kept thinking, like, if they did away with trying to be folk singers, and they, I'm like, what does it look like if they're not doing that? Like when we did Boy Genius, right? They're not trying to be folk singers. Like, there's, and their harmonies are there. Like, there's something that I think that is cool here. And I do have a theory that I'm going to save in the final song of the record. And that's another thing where I'm like, there's potential that I'm really interested in. But I didn't like I'm being like overly, I think, dramatic right now. We have listened to worse things, and I have listened to worse things.
There we go.
But it was frustrating because I was excited. I was excited to listen to it because everyone that I, you know, have trust in liked this band. And now I don't trust you.
Here's the thing. You never did, buddy.
I didn't.
The worst thing I said was, I think you'll like this. I'm like, well, famous last words. Silly.
Did you see it flick in my brain? Yeah. I was like, what? What did you think I'd like? Excuse me?
Oh, speaking of, let's kick it off.
The Lion's Roar.
Well, titular track here.
What do you like about the Lion's Roar? I mean, list it out for me.
I can go into, I mean, already I think it starts with like enough of a, like, okay, they're really good at letting us know immediately. I was gonna, like, okay, we're going to get harmonies out of them. We're going to get like acoustics. But I really like the flute.
Is that a flute or is that a...
I don't know.
I think that's a keyboard. That's like...
I'm sure it's some sort of synth flute or something like that, but yeah. it captures... It reminds me a whole lot of like Stairway to Heaven.
It definitely does. Yeah. I mean, what is the... you guys use it all the time. And I used it also on my last...
Are you talking about the Ebo?
I think so, yeah. Or the... what's that? It's like a synth kind of... Man, shit.
Is it a pedal?
Yeah, it's like a pedal.
It may be like the Mal 9 or something like that. You got to remember, my partner in crime, when it comes to... He's the one who has...
He would... Because he's actually the one who brought it up to me and gave me the idea to use it on my last record. But once the first verse, which I want to get back to, but once we're done with the first verse and the chorus and we hit the second and that comes in, that's a good kind of like musical arrangement. It makes me not dread the next 4 minutes, because initially I was like, this is slow and I am bored. What are we doing?
Interesting. So let's get back to probably what dragged you into boredom here.
Okay.
So I'm assuming it's... I have a tough time thinking it's entirely melody, so I can't help but go with maybe lyrically.
It's a little... Here's the thing. When I said the main thing, which is kind of it's a jerk thing to say, but I think the...
Own it, buddy.
The melodies are kind of a thing for me on the record as a whole, but for, like, this song, it's very obvious. And I think because the vocals are so good, they're so clean, they're so crisp, the harmonies are so tight that you almost don't notice it. Right.
Yeah.
But the melodies are very like painting in really broad brushes. The lyrics are also like, there's a kind of like a hat on a hat on a hat. Like nothing is trying to announce itself as like the main focus.
Yeah.
The melody feels very broad to me. The lyrics are this song, and there's a couple others where the imagery feels like interesting-ish, right? The way she sings this, though, listen to it again. Like, the way she uses the syllables in that, what's going on there? It's really weird.
Are you talking about, like, the moments where she kind of squeezes syllables in, like, a lot faster?
And she does it on this song specifically, which makes me think it's a choice, but it also, man, it bugs me. It doesn't have the effect I think she wants it to have.
Well, I still kind of dig it. I can't help but go, like, this is a second language for them. They're not English immediate. So, I mean, there's kind of room. But what I would say to agree with what you're going towards, there's a lot of folk cliches that they kind of follow, thinking, like, this is good folk lyric, as opposed to like a really inspired lyric that feels like it's a lot more rooted in something sincere that happened to him. And I'm not saying that there's no, you know, self-reflection involved in this, but there are just moments where I'm like, are you making it bigger than it actually is? And could you have just been a little more honest? I don't know. I can't say for certain, but they're also two young ladies who just... They had these pristine voices that sounded great together. So they have to kind of...
And this is my fault, not yours, that I haven't used their names. Yeah, I know. Clara and Johanna Soderbergh.
Yes.
But I'm not aware who's singing at which parts.
Clara is the more front one.
Okay.
She's the main vocalist. And then Johanna...
She's the one with the bangs, right?
Yes, even though I'm sure that they both have rock.
Yeah, and now I'm like, I'm very specific to the video.
Let's go hair color. She has Clara has the darker hair, and better. Johanna has like kind of more the blonde.
No, and I know, I think you saying that it feels more about just following a kind of folk template makes sense, because it is. Yeah. I mean, it's the minor, it's the E, right? It's like a minor E minor, and it's very... I mean, there's a lot of power to that progression, right? And I've seen, I mean, I've used it. I think a lot of people have, obviously. But and it is maybe that they're attempting to tell a story, but it also feels like, I think the rushing of the syllables starts to distract from whatever they're trying to do. Like, I keep going back to that line. What is it? By those who preach and pray and teach, which I don't hate that line. That's kind of cool. But the
when she falls short and the night falls into laughter and the night explodes.
That's right. That's
laughter.
Right. And like the pray and teach is like a poo-poo. Yeah. I feel like I got sucked in the mouth twice. And it ruins that internal rhyme that she has that I think is actually good. And it gives it, I think the problem with that is like that, like delayed delivery. That's like a Dylan move. Like that, there are folk singers who do that, and it gives it it's like a folky rustic quality.
Yeah.
And there's nothing about their voices that is rustic. There's nothing to me that is like following. It's beautiful. That's the thing. Rustic is, you know what I mean? Like,
but I mean, honestly, the biggest one is in the chorus.
Yeah, that first line is good. Like when it says that I'm a goddamn coward, like hold that out. Like that's good.
Well, I mean, but then again, so are you. And line for line, there are moments to where I do think there's a squeezing in of the syllables to where there's kind of a difficulty in listening to it, but at the same time, there's not, because they have the Andy Hull bravado of like it's gonna sound good. So they almost just can roll with it. It's like, okay, if that didn't sound just right, what are we doing wrong with the harmony? As opposed to correcting something that might be a little more deep-rooted in it as opposed to the surface level.
But it's also the stresses, right? Because, like, in that line, it's, I'm a goddamn coward. Yeah. And, like, and here again, like, I feel like I'm just like, no, follow the obvious. I get that. Like, 9 out of 10, 19 out of 20, 99 out of 100 people would go, I'm a goddamn, like, hold out the first, right? That syllable, like, God, and like, goddamn, like, it gives it, like, to me, there's nothing about it. And funny enough, I had a similar conversation with you with Radiohead and Paranoid Android, where I think if you're gonna mess with convention like that, I'm in. It's gotta work.
Well, and Radiohead kind of lends itself to messing with convention a lot more than First Aid Kit would.
And point well taken there. So that's where I think this first song for me was very like, I had worries, I had concerns. But like you said, there are times where I'm like, this is cool. Like when we get into the second verse and like I feel bad, but when the instrumentals hit, there's some cool like arrangements on this record. And I find there's a lot of restraint from Mike Mogus. I think you had that complaint from Mike Mogus in the past where there's a lot of production.
Yeah, sure. Put it on me, buddy.
You did.
I probably did. Yeah.
Please replay the exact criticism.
Email us at no.your.writs.podcast@gmail.com if you agree with me.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. Of course. And guess what, buddy? We're gonna get a ton of emails this time. I get it.
But no, I mean, I like every. I still like when it transitions out of the second chorus and hits that bridge. I think that's kind of a nice little subtlety. I like the chord change into the "Sometimes I Wish I Could Find My Rosemary Hill," which is a real thing. That's like a South African location, but there's a little bit of that like. What does it really represent to you, or did it just sound cool? Did it just sound folky enough lyrically?
I'm ready for the next one, because I think that what you're saying to me hits a lot of points, and it is very much like, you know, wearing a cowboy hat to Coachella. Like it has that vibe to me of being out in the desert and just getting that like kind of.
I'll let you get there, but I do just want to say, and if I wanted it, and if I wanted it to, I would let it lead me back, to you. I don't like that part. That is my least favorite moment. I'm like, I get it. You guys can harmonize, but you just wasted a couple syllables here where you could have applied a word as opposed to like that actually sounds more like Tenacious D to me.
She does that though in the second verse that I could read you just like a book, like, and if it just kind of it ends it, and I'm like, are we going to the next line? Like it feels like they wrote the lyrics first, which I know I don't think happened, but that's what it seems like, that they wrote the lyrics first, and it's like, you know, when you try to like, just write lines, like write bars, and then. The music plays and you just try to like fit to whatever the music is doing. Like you're,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like one sibling went into one room and wrote the music, and the other sibling went and wrote the lyrics, and they're like, we're just going to make it work.
Oh my God. They pulled a Blink 182.
Man.
Yeesh.
Hearing all the Blink 182. When we did that episode with Alex, I felt bad because I was like, man, they tried so hard on that record.
I still love that record. I was on the opposite side, but just the last thing I'll say.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. But I do like the drum fill to close it out and closing it with that big musical segment.
The drums sound good on this record.
Yeah.
The music in general sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So that's Lion's Roar. Does that fit into any of your categories?
It does not. Emmylou does.
This does for me as well. Okay. I'm afraid. This is my favorite song.
Overrated.
Overrated? Okay.
Overrated. Because you actually had a story. We were talking about, I don't know what episode it was, and you brought up Emmylou. You had a nice moment with this song.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they played it for like an Emmylou appreciation night. I believe they played it at the Grand Ole Opry. Mm-hmm. And it was just a beautiful moment. And it's like the whole story behind the chorus, or the feeling behind the chorus. I just like, I like this. I don't care if it's cliche. It's like, I like that. I'll be your Emmylou if you'll be my Graham.
Right. No, it'll be my Emmylou and my June.
Yeah.
It'll be my Graham. And by the way, like Johnny Cash, famous for being super great at being a husband. And
I get it. But the whole point of the song, I think that that's more of a love letter between the two of them. Kind of like, I just love doing this with you. You know, like, I don't view it so much as a love song when I listen to Emmylou. I view it as a love of playing music, a love of singing together. I mean, that almost sounds, it's almost taking away from what should be the underlying real message behind it. But I actually think it's pretty straightforward. I think this is them kind of appreciating just singing together and being a part of this together, even from the origin story that they tell at that Grand Ole Opry. It's just like, they just love the idea of singing along with somebody and hearing these voices that work so well together.
There's a sentiment there that I can appreciate. The
verses don't make any sense for that.
No, but there are some good lines in the verse. Like I actually did like actually the opening, right? Bitter winds are coming in. I'm already missing the summer. Stockholm's cold, but I've been told I was born to endure this kind of weather. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's good writing. Like that there is, and this is again where there are other times in this record where I went back to this, like literally these lines, and I was like, what happened? I have a suspicion there that there's, it says like all songs are written by both of them. And I'd be curious to know if there's like a one or the other. Right, if there's a real Kylie situation going on,
Team Blake,
of course, Team Benny.
but I don't think that's far fetched at all, because I feel the same way throughout the album. To where, I mean, even on this song, when it hits that bridge and that's Joanna singing,
okay,
you know, like I think she wrote that, and it is a little bit more of like trigger words as opposed to a complete clear concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I do think those are the weakest lyrics. I'm really ruining this because I kind of have a crush on Joanna. So like I went from 2% chance to 1% chance, to probably 0.2% chance.
I'd love to know where the 2% came from. I love you, man.
Wishful thinking, buddy.
No, but I mean, there's definitely, and I can see it, right? There's the, and yes, I might have lied to you, and you wouldn't feel better for knowing the truth. How fast, long last, like there's some big rhyming, like AABB, mm-hmm. and that happens a lot on this album. There's I agree, and it feels kind of like skidding to a halt, like with there's a certain nimble quality to certain lyrics, and I think they happen earlier in the record. Like literally, I think we hit the two where they happen the most. I want to get to the chorus quickly because this is like me yucking a bunch of people's yums. I get it.
Mine especially.
Man, I find that insufferable. I find it so annoying, and I just don't like it.
Man, I think it's pretty. As somebody who really hates repetition for choruses, I actually find this one to be like a good balance of like adding a little more, but not getting a little too carried away. and keeping the chorus interesting without keeping it dull. I think that this chorus is actually probably my favorite segment on the entire album.
It's the, how do I put it? And I think it is kind of like, okay, I've been watching The West Wing a lot lately, right? And this is, I swear to God, this has a point.
Twilight Zone here.
So I get it. So I've been watching The West Wing a lot. The West Wing and Aaron Sorkin specifically, right? As a, like a writer for television. I know he's written for movies, but he's more of a TV writer, I think. But it is so like unabashedly like corny and idealistic. And that was like that's the whole draw, especially nowadays, I think. Reason why we wanted to watch The West Wing is it gives you a vision of politics that is all about ideals, all about trying to do the right thing as much as possible. Yeah. And like decency, like decent people trying to do things. And there are times on that show where I am fully aware of like my cynic brain kicking in and going, like, I want to deconstruct this. But there is an appeal to losing myself to that moment that I personally don't always give myself. And that's something I think about and I try to work on. But
sometimes an easy pill to swallow is kind of nice.
That's right. But yeah. Man, there's something when and it hits me. I think it's the, it has very much of the time it was released to me, like a very MySpace, like posting. It's like a quote you would post on your MySpace thing that, yeah. Here's the thing. Maybe I should put it this way. I use the word insufferable. It's cringy to me now. And not, I think the other reason I have this is watching the music video. Man, that music video made me upset because it's just them in like folksy dresses walking around the desert. Like what could be Lancaster, funny enough. And whenever I see Joshua Trees, do you do the same thing? When I see Joshua Trees, I just assume it's Lancaster because it's cheap and it's by LA.
Of course. And there's not too many places where Joshua trees grow.
Yeah.
I don't make that mistake, Colton. I stay away from music videos.
That's fair.
Music videos really fuck
that music video bug the hell out of me. Because it is very much like just anything to signal them as rustic country folk singers, and like the fact that it's a beautiful arrangement with beautiful slides and things like that helps. But it is overrated for me because it's like it's ankle deep, man, to me, ankle deep. And it got a
grimace.
Cool.
I don't know if that's how that's pronounced, but
the song stuck in my head, by the way. I told you, like, this is the song where I've had the chorus in my head, and to me it's part of the problem. I don't know.
My defense of the chorus is I feel like it is actually so rooted in what they truly are. Like, I feel like this was probably the most effortless, but also still like pretty. It has a good message to it, but this fits them. It's like there are certain moments on the rest of the album where I'm like, I feel like this is pushing. This is like throwing that you're really trying to climb to this next spot on the rock where it's like right here. To me, that's the money spot. And I think of it more lyrically.
You and I are making similar observations. We're just not reaching the same conclusion because I agree. I think this chorus to me says exactly who they are. The problem with me is that they're trying to rely on like big Mount Rushmore names of like American country and folk. And they're going for the biggest template fitting. This is what they want to be. And
yeah, I mean, they're talking about people who harmonize together. That's what their MO is. I get you. I'm okay with it just because I feel like it's the most sincere. It feels like this song, we've talked about this before, feels like this song poured out of them. It doesn't feel like there was this whole like strenuous, like, wait, no, we got to really stress this part. And I can really appreciate that personally.
I'll agree with that only because there are other times where I felt the labor. So I agree.
Yeah. All right. So.
In the Hearts of Men. Give me one second.
I understand.
In the hearts of men, in the arms of mothers.
All right, while you're getting it in.
No, it's another beautiful arrangement.
Yeah, pretty arrangement. I think that vocal melody and the sway of that vocal melody is really nice, especially when the band like really kicks in where it's like, okay, now we're in kind of full arrangement. I like the little swing she does on that note to where I think there's a lot of promise in the vocal melody on this one. Just the chorus, I don't even know if it's the chorus, but when they hit that line, I'm like, this is pretty, but it feels like it goes nowhere from there.
Yeah, it. I'm trying to think of.
And again, we're dealing with some. We're dealing with some tropes again.
I think that's the other part of it too. I'm trying to think of a comparison. It's just this has like a very Coldplay kind of a line to it, like in like early Coldplay, like Parachutes, where like that record. Even you know, I remember buying that record when I was younger and like thinking I liked it. I really didn't, but I like Trouble. Trouble's a good song.
Trouble's a great freaking.
That's
song.
A very good song, yeah. but. The it has that quality of like it starts and it's kind of revealed its hand, like
yeah,
you're in the song, and that again is it's similar to me with Lion's Roar, where there's songs of theirs that like just establish themselves, this is it, and I can when I had the lyrics all out in front of me, it's like one straight line and I could just see where the pavement goes and there's nothing that is gonna interest me other than how pretty it can sound. Like when I listen to this record and this song specifically, I listened to it once engaged. Listened to it a second time engaged, but in between the two, I had it playing while I was doing something else. That's where this record like sounded the best. So I was doing something else and it was on.
It's very interesting because like a song like this, and I think that this is actually kind of a reoccurring theme throughout the there's a lot of kind of like people watching while walking around like throughout the album. There just seems to be like little like moments and lyrics to where it says that, or it sounds like that specifically. But when I was walking, because at my job, I do a lot, oddly enough, I'm a driver, but I still do a lot of walking.
Buddy, I don't think you're doing that right.
Best of luck, everybody.
I don't
want to
tell you to do your job.
But like walking to this album is really nice, and I guess it's almost a mixture of what you're talking about, the being engaged and also kind of having a distraction of scenery or not, or it's like that's something that makes In the Hearts of Man not a bad tune to me. But how do you feel about the la da 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 la da da da? This is a moment where I'm going like, all right, that's your guys's pocket here. The reason I can get behind this part is because it sounds like she's kind of on a walk. She's kind of observing things, and at some point she reaches the la-di-da-di-da thing.
See, I think they should, if the vocals dropped and let the... There are times in this record
I
where it
totally
lets
agree
the music
with that.
Go. I think it sounds better.
I don't know if it's necessary. Now, granted, you said you enjoyed it a little bit more on the second listen, so who knows? Maybe on the third listen, you're ready for it. And all of a sudden, you're singing it to yourself.
But I don't know if there's going to be a third listen.
Man, I hope... That's fine. That's fine. I hope tomorrow... You're doing dishes, and all of a sudden you just find yourself going, la, da, 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 da.
Don't want to do that.
Da, da. I want it so
it's,
bad for you.
It's, yeah. I think there's a couple, this song and a couple others, where I find myself unable to, like, I'm not literally trying to find holes to poke. I really am not. But I also, I can't find
it
anything.
Sounds like
I'm
you just know where they are.
I just don't know. Well, there's a kind of there-ness. Funny enough, like, when we're talking about Milk Carton Kids, there's a lot about the Milk Carton Kids I think applies to First Aid Kit.
I definitely agree. The only downside is Milk Carton Kids have way better lyrics. I'm so sorry. I've gone down to 0.1% chance.
And they do, but they also, and like me recognizing that, they also have lyrics where I'm like, what are we doing? Like, this isn't interesting. Yeah. Like, it's nothing. But it's just they can harmonize the crap out of the song with each other.
Yep, yep.
And it can make it feel compelling even when, you know, it's like you come away and you're like, what did I just eat? Like, there's nothing there.
It's kind of the difficulty about acts like this, because you brought up Milk Carton Kids. I can think of Simon and Garfunkel. You know, like, there are moments where it's like, is this masking a flaw in the song?
Except if it's Simon and Garfunkel. You're likely not.
There are some.
We'll talk about it.
We'll get there, everybody.
It did make
Simon
a note
and Garfunkel
that
is going to be top of the...
I mean, Paul Simon specifically. There was a note I saw on the Wikipedia where it said Paul Simon gave them a standing ovation.
Standing
ovation. They did a cover of America. I'm like, it's just because that's a good song. That's, if you give them good songs to sing, I'm sure it'll be amazing. Moving
well,
on.
I think we've ran across one.
Yeah, are we about to talk about another? Is it Blue?
I really like Blue. Blue actually was one of those like, oh, okay, cool. It's not all gonna just be
slow and plotting. And,
yeah,
I mean Emmalou wasn't, but it is a different sonic. Yeah. Landscape, like for sure.
Yeah, the texture comes in, and it's like I can't help but think of a couple of like '90s songs. Like for some reason, Brimful of Asher pops into my head. You know that song?
Well, how's it go?
Brimful of Asher and the 45. Oh, it's a brimful. This will not be on the pod.
Oh, please put it on there.
I may be getting the lyrics wrong. But it's got that kind of like major scale chord progression to it. And it's just it has a hop to it. And I was like, yeah, I can kind of dig this. I had no qualms with Blue.
I don't like the toy shop xylophone. And I say that because that is a very 2000s indie move. That this reminds me a lot of Death Cab for Cutie. This song,
okay,
the do like the low end, the bass in that. But that again, it's just everything's so on the nose. Like everything is like fastball down the middle. Like to get the melody, they do that like really kind of twee xylophone. It's a very I don't know. It actually doesn't. It doesn't hit my ear right with the rest of the song. And it I don't know.
See, and I seem to like, I mean, it feels like I like the message of her, like kind of bit like feeling like she's got to avoid people, but like have to turn her back around. Or it's like, maybe it's my fault that I'm not like interacting with people as well.
I want to make
this
something.
This is my impression. I have not done like deep dives into what they specifically said songs were about.
This is where you mentioned a couple times, like the message, right? And I want to make it clear about something.
You like, don't think
we talk about these songs? Oh no! Like when you talk about these songs, and you're like, "Well, I like that." The message is da da da. Like with Emmylou, same thing. Yeah. I'm with you, buddy. I'm there with the message. Like I'm not like self reflection, thinking about whether or not we've changed. Okay. Like I'm in. I am in on that. It's the vehicle for the message.
I was going to say some execution. Qualms.
Execution thing is what gets me because it's very this is maybe similar to Hearts of Men where it's just nothing for me to really recommend like and it doesn't feel like interesting. I guess that's the thing. I was bored in a lot of ways because I think this song being the most different, there was stuff for me to like get more into. I don't like the chorus. I don't like that. Let me just do it one more time.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. The yes, you.
It is. It's a level of twee that I. And we've been on different sides of this before. Like, I've been in favor of real Kylie twee, and you are very on record of not. And
one particular, that's just, for damn sure.
No, I was proud
actually
of that.
Two. There were two, actually. There was another one. Yeah.
But that's the thing. I want there to be maybe a bit more muscle behind it. Like this song is like it's small enough, it's short, and they know it's meant to be a shorter thing. So I can't it's not that I'm like too heavy on it. It's just that record as a whole beat me down so much with like wanting I wanted like that's the thing. I was like grasping for things.
I can't agree because like what is the lyric that like the person in the mirror yeah it's you. There's a little bit of too obvious execution here to where I think something that would save the record a lot more is some better lyrical shifts. I mean, we talked about it with Connor Oberst. He has those moments to where it's like the way he'll switch it up to where you almost hear exactly how you're supposed to finish this rhyme, but he finds a way to tweak it just enough at the end. Where in that lyric, the like that person in the mirror, yeah, it's you. It's you kind of nail it. It's on the nose where it's like you couldn't find a cool way to switch that or just find some other way to phrase this.
It's where you're looking for something to like suggest like a level of like anything, right? Like, and I think it's like The Bridge, same thing, where it's like, maybe tomorrow you'll make a change, maybe someday soon you'll find the strength. Like, there's nothing there. And like, it's a very Bridge kind of a lyric where it literally is just to get to the chorus. Like,
yeah. There's nothing bring us there back, yeah.
But it's also, it's just empty, but it doesn't feel empty because it's sung in a really beautiful way. But from like a songwriting standpoint, it irks me. It's like a buzz in my ear where I'm just like, ugh.
And I get what you're saying, because the only pushback I have on that is that it's not that it's empty. I don't think that those lyrics are not saying anything. And again, you've already said it's not you're not taken away from the message. Mm-hmm. It's just when it comes to the genre of folk, like, the way you say something is going to be just so much, it carries such value that if you just rely on sounding pretty, which they do, they sound very pristine. If you just say a boring line and you don't put some sort of twist on it or some sort of way that it's like, oh, that was really clever, that was actually really good wordplay in this, then it becomes like, okay, you're relying too much on this one particular aspect, and then you're going to get people like Colton who go like, all right, I know what to expect now.
People like Colton. Oh, my
people
God.
Love Colton.
This old routine.
I like this song.
I like the second half. I like the switch.
I like the switch too, but here's what I like about this song, and I think you can get behind this enough. I like the musical growth, the instrumentation growth behind it. And I know that it is really subdued. It is not really going that far, but even, like, I don't know if you have anything to say for when it first kicks in. Like, I like...
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
When that kicks in, that's awesome. And I think that the verse actually had a really nice setup to where I think that those lyrics are actually compelling, because I'm like, ooh, this is an interesting scenery. You know, they're just like, he walks in and he sees her searching through a door. And I'm like, what are you looking for? And she's like, I'm not really sure. I know that those are kind of really like very, very obvious rhymes, but I just like the scenery that's put in my head, because I'm thinking this old routine. This could just be related to my job, but I'm like, my initial approach, I'm like, oh, it's like an aging couple, right? So I know. But
I'm doing my head shake. I'm doing like, I wish this one, I do wish we had a camera on.
I'll film. Let me pull out my phone.
No,
right,
no,
because
I'm like nodding in a sarcastic way, and Rob has to respond to my nods. I want you to keep going though, because I'm like trying to talk myself into these lyrics in real time, because you're doing a good argument for it.
I'm doing an okay one, but again, I'm making an argument for lyrics in a song that I feel like the music really carries the day. Because even when it comes out of that first chorus, which I think the melody is really nice, but when it comes out of that, there's a little bit of that snare stacked onto it. Just a little bit of drumming. That is good drumming right there. That is really subtle, building it up a little bit more.
When it goes to the snare, when it's talking about the sun fighting a war, right? And it does the little like march. It's neat. These lyrics to me, honestly, man, who cares? Honestly, is it that cool? Come on.
It's all right. Yes, when it talks about the sun fighting the war, he won't tell you what he's fighting it for.
I hate that line.
These lyrics
are bad, man. I don't like these lyrics, and I don't. And I like the message of the lyrics, but like Shore's nice. Shore's nice little, and it doesn't. I always feel very self-conscious when I'm like, you know, kind of like, oh, this is a good lyric, this is a bad lyric. Like, I never want people to feel like I'm just like on the seat of my pants. Do I like it or don't?
I think what we really have to clarify with the listener, like when I'm writing a song, I think the same goes for you when you're writing a song. We're really, really conscious about how that rhyme scheme flows. Like, what's the term you used before? Like, we like really soft rhymes.
But yeah, like, I think
when you hear shore and rhyme it with floor, it's like, come on, man, we can do something different.
But it's also the, like, there's a way on the other path, right? Where if you're going to do big, bold rhymes, like we have talked about songwriters that do big, bold, simple rhyme schemes. I mean, this is it's basically A, right? B, 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 B. Like these, which again, I've done, you've done, people have done that, right? But it's, It's that the way, like the scenery you're talking about, and this is where the opening, like the idea of like a older couple, like lost the passion, like there's a compelling spark to that idea. But she is not like, and I say she, because again, I don't know which sibling or if it's both. So I feel bad, like just kind of generalizing the
shit. You both got to take it.
But it doesn't feel to me like the songwriter is in control of the imagery. It feels to me like the rhyme scheme is in control of the imagery. That's my problem. It feels like the whatever word she knows she can rhyme, that's like her anchor. She's like, okay, how do I get there? And so we get certain, and there are other lines, the same thing where I'm like, what does that mean? I think the sun verse is a good example. I like that they're switching it up, but when it goes to your youngest is out fighting a war and he won't say what he's fighting for. And then it's, if he's gone because of war for you. And then here, I looked at this line for minutes. I'm not going to say hours.
Okay. All right.
If he's gone because of war for you, in which you'd rather be true. What does that mean? But it doesn't make sense. In which you'd rather be true?
There are moments here. There are moments that happen on this album.
Grammatically doesn't make sense, but it also doesn't make sense in a like in the verse, right? Because the whole line is like, you'd rather he not be fighting for you? Or I don't know.
Yeah. This is
you see what I'm saying, man?
Yeah, like, there's hey, I mean, I don't have any, I do like this song, but again, it's the soundscapes of it all.
Like, you're gonna listen to this song tomorrow?
It's the same thing that goes for all of our episodes. Once I get through like the week of abusing myself with an album, I'm not going to listen to most of it for a while.
That's fair. But I
would come back to this old routine. Yeah, I would come back to this.
There's a low hanging fruit there I could take, but I'm not. The old routine. Just make it part of it.
I dangled it out there for you. I wanted you to have a moment.
No, it's in like the one last one, that sometimes you can't even recall the sound of his laughter. Oh, well, did you ever really know the sound? Like I said, man.
Too many sounds. It's too much saying sound here. And sometimes that's okay. We talked about it in the old man episode. But I think that was because there's a little bit more of a respect to why Neil Young did it. Whereas in this instance, this happens a few more times.
It happens a couple more times.
Yeah. Or it's like, stop doing that.
All right.
There's almost a bravado to the damn thing.
I am in real time trying to tell myself, where's my underrated? I want to go back one. Blue is my underrated.
Are you pulling a whoopsie?
I'm pulling a whoopsie.
Okay.
Here's the reason why. Because like, I feel like halfway through that song, I started to appreciate a bit more about it than I did.
Yeah. And whoever's listening to this episode is going like, you sure didn't.
I know. Right. Like there's everybody. If there could be a microphone in my brain, the internal fight, if everyone's like, if everyone thinks I take joy and like, wow, he's really ripping into this, the voices in my brain are like, ease up. What are we doing? Find something nice. Find a nice thing. Well, I could not sit here and talk to my best friend, Rob, and just say pleasantries for 2 hours. What a bummer.
No, that's fine. Honestly, I believe Leo sent me a text not that well. I can't remember what we were talking about. But he was like, should I prepare for him to just shit all over this song that you guys are about to talk to? And I was like, I do that every episode. Just prepare for it. Like,
what song was it? I bet you I didn't.
I'm pretty sure it was Radiohead. I'm pretty sure.
And I didn't. Actually, I like that song.
Yeah, you didn't really. You didn't really ship it.
Moving on. Moving on. To a Poet. It's great. I love it. I love everything about To a Poet. A+.
I'm going to be a broken record. It's talking about to you, a broken record. I think the transition from the opener, because the opener, I'm kind of like, okay, where are we going with this? But I really like the chorus. When they hit that chorus, I'm sorry, their voices sound really nice on this. I think it's a really cool enhancement to it. It's not an obvious change into chorus.
I The there's nothing more to it. I just get through it. And this is what I'm talking about. That can work.
All right.
Like, I like that.
Hold on.
I
but
like
that's that. Not the chorus to me. To me, the part before the melody.
But that's the chorus. Right? I'm trying to say a nice thing. I like that.
Oh, part. Really? Okay. Because yeah. To me, actually, the closeout to the chorus, then there's nothing.
Oh, is it bad? And
yeah, like that part, I go like, cringe. A little
dude,
bit
calm
of cringe.
Down. Oh, my little, God.
I know.
Be more
you know,
positive.
It's contagious, Colden. It's contagious.
No, I was actually, that to me, I was like, okay, that's the line. Like, that's where I could see the record leaning more into, and what I mean is not like super nimble, not like, I don't need them to be hyper articulate and I don't need them to be storytellers because I don't think
that's a good point.
I don't think those songs really hit on this record. The ones where they're in like in a very thoughtful, cool way, wanting to envision the lives of others or like, you know, like you said, like kind of like the flaneur narrative, right? Like walking around and like getting the stories of others, very folksy and rambling. This to me, like when they're like leaning into the emotional, like just tough it out, right? Kind of heartbreak 101. But also the lyrics are simple. And it's a rhyme that could grate people, like nothing more to it, just got to get through it. And yet it's the two through before the it that works, and I like that, and I'm like, I'm in. Like, there's some cool, interesting things there, but I don't know about the rest of it. Do you?
I like the outro. I like, so probably from about the 3:30 on, when it does that change, when I ask, yeah, where are you, right, just when I needed you to, I'm like, bad lyric or not. Not bad lyric, obvious lyric, let me just phrase it that way, but what that vocal melody does to shift the song, it's hinting at how we're going to come out of this, and I think it has that really cool big moment where I actually like this towards the end of the album, when they start doing the ooh-ooh-oohs together to where it's like there are no lyrics, but they're just their voices together are an extra instrument behind it. Man, when it comes out of that, that's a cool big moment.
That is very good. And that is like in a record that to me musically can feel very strong, right? And the arrangements are, I would say, very good overall. I don't think there's any one song minus, I still am not sold on the xylophone on Blue, but minus that, I don't think there's really any missteps, right? And I think,
oh, I do, but I'll get there.
I am fascinated. But interesting, I think that there's, at the same time, the music definitely takes a back seat, but in that moment of that, like it's kind of transcendent. It really is. And I don't think the first half of the song is strong enough to really get to the second half, but that ooh, and like even the oohs, I should not like those because they kind of bother me. But they do. I mean, once you just submit, meaning me, once I submit to the vocals are just the instrument, and it is the lead guitar of this whole arrangement.
Yeah. And it's teamed up with strings. It's teamed up with a nice Mogus like build up beside it.
It's a great arrangement.
Yeah. So that was a really cool moment. And so I mean, to a poet, God, I may whoopsie, but for now I'm gonna say this might actually be my underrated.
Can I ask you another question? I'm gonna read the first verse again for you.
Oh no.
And you said, don't give me nothing you don't want to lose. I said, darling, I'll give you everything I got if I want them to choose. Who's the them? What do we choose? What's going on here?
I don't know. Honestly, you said a word that they abuse so much.
Darling?
Darling.
I was going to say sincere. They say sincere a lot. Sincere and clear.
Darling's the one that kind of annoys me the most from him. He's like, but I've also told you before, I'm like, I don't like baby. The certain little pet name thing, I'm usually not a fan of. But I guess within how it's supposed to be utilized, most people have pet names for a lover.
I have my suspicion of which of the two wrote this one, because this one's got some pretty... I said sincere. They say it multiple times, and I do think it's one songwriter that likes it. No matter how many times I tell myself I have to be sincere, I have a hard time standing up and facing those fears. But Frank, and then you talk about Frank. That's nice. But man, that sounds bad, man. I don't know. And again, like, I feel very like, bad. I don't know. I'm like putting another spin on it. But sincere is such a weird word to use there. And it's also like, that doesn't really match what's going on with that verse to me.
Yeah.
It's not, sincere is not the antonym of afraid. I don't know. Moving on. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it's these are, if there's anything that really got to me throughout the whole album, this is what we would have to kind of bring up to her. It's like, this is kind of one of the aspects that makes it fall a little short of where I feel it could fall.
You have to help me as the resident podcast historian, or Casey Miller. I wish Casey Miller.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not me, buddy. But we were
talking about a record, I think, and both of us were like, wow, this is rough. Like, and it was lyrics specific. And
I don't know if you remember, but we're on episode 77.
Wait, this is worth me looking it up, because
okay, all right,
there is a point that accompanies this from.
Did you find it?
I did. Yeah, it was. So we talked about Be Your Own Pet, and and I remember we were hard on those, because man, and again though, I think in a way, yeah, those lyrics are a bit more forgivable at times, because Be Your Own Pet has an ethos to like what they're doing musically and sonically, mm-hmm, that I think lends itself at times to screw it, right? Just yes, get it out.
Yeah. Yeah, Gemini Pearl definitely has that kind of like, I can fuck you, I'm not going to say it how you want me to.
Exactly. And yeah, so I remember at times being charmed by that, and other times I think we both went, ooh, it ain't going to go, man. And
I believe it was on their second album that I got most annoyed by that.
That's right. And so with First Aid Kit, my thing is, it's folk, man. Folk is lyrics. It's got to be. It's
really is going to carry it.
The only thing I love most about that tradition, and like in basic, like, you know, from like, not to get too heavy here, but like, like during enslavement, right? Like,
yeah,
folk is like lyrical prowess. It is. I feel very heavy handed here coming down on this record and bring that up, but it just, it's a tradition that you're conjuring up, that you're talking about. And this is where the kind of like storefront folk, wear a cowboy hat, put on some boots, and play pretend to be a country singer. That's what bothers me about this.
We've talked about this before. I don't know if we have actually on the podcast, but there are people who cry at the sound and people who cry at the lyrics. I would imagine that you're a lot more in that, like, not saying that you cried, but it's like when a song really...
I've never cried in my life. Are you kidding?
No. Yeah.
But also, really quick, I just want to make a quick thing here. People who know me and listen to the pod know this already, but I am also not like born from the country folk guy.
Yeah, but folk is definitely your area of expertise.
I love it.
And that's where you come from as a songwriter.
I think that's what it is. I feel very humble when I do in the tradition, because you know, to me, when you have an acoustic guitar, there's no place to hide. Like, you have to be lyrically correct. I don't care how good your voice is, you have to be lyrically correct.
But that's what I was more getting at. It's like, there are some times where like I've listened to a song and I'm just like, I don't know what they're saying, but this is just so pretty to me. I'll look it up later and I'm like, God, the lyrics are kind of dog shit, but I was literally crying when I was listening to that, because everything just sounded so pretty. Like Collie Strings by Manchester Orchestra. I don't think it's phenomenal lyrics, but something about that song just pulls at me, you know?
I'm remembering all the lines of Collie Strings that when I was younger, I was like, oh yeah, cool. And now I'm like, what?
Yeah. you know what I mean? But there's just some about when the drums kick in. It's like, yeah, sunset of mirror, you're smoking gun. Like, I don't know what that means, but man, I feel this. So it is interesting for First Aid Kit to kind of have a very folk sound.
I literally was about to say duality, and now I'm looking up the lyrics to I Find a Way, and there it is, staring at me right in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. So, I Found a Way. Give me one tick here.
Take my duality away.
This one's really tough for me because I'm doing it again, the music, like when it hits that little flute or whatever we're going to call it, synth flute coming out of the chorus. But when it first hits that first chorus, when it kind of has that like major shift, I was a little let down. When it first hits, I don't know, I'm like, I kind of liked this minor chord melancholy we were in. Like, and yeah, the it's me. And like, okay, that's a little obvious, but it sounds cool. Everything's neat. And I really love the emotional musicality behind it. But then it hits the chorus and I'm like, it's a little too uplifted. But it does find a way to complete the chorus to where I don't find it to be.
It is literally just mashing Lion's Roar and Emmy Lou.
There is a lot of them.
It's like the like almost exactly Lion's Roar in the verse, and when the chorus hits, it's Emmy Lou. Like it's, I mean, they might have capoed it different, but
that's, you know what, that's a good point.
It's the same.
That's actually a really good point, because then also it hits that like and it's like there's a little bit This almost, well, I mean, fine. It's at the, like, it's like kind of at the middle point, right?
Oh, you think this is intentional?
Of course I do.
Oh, you think it's just them going like, like.
We're talking a lot of powerhouses in the.
What better way, 7-track of album than to just redo track 1 and 2?
I will say that the little like. That does seem almost thematic throughout the album. There is like a little bit of touch of that melody that happens as like some sort of lead part throughout all of them.
Man, when I am on trial for bad songwriting, I want you, and I will be, for the record, I want you to be my lawyer, man.
Hell no. I'm going to be like, yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, I would sell it.
I'm pretty sure death penalty.
Yeah, I think that's what we do now, right? With these kinds of songwriters. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I'll put this one in the same box that I put Hearts of Men, right? Mm-hmm. And those, where nothing really for me to suggest or recommend. And it's very, it's like when I read the track, when I read the song title, I got it. Like, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think some of it too, and this is maybe a broader comment, like, it's an album with one basic texture, right? It's all strums. Mm-hmm. With like, there's no like, it's, you know, I am not like finger picker like genius guy, but there's no variation to the arrangements
throughout the album. It's pretty much a strumming acoustic chords, every now and then the finger picking song. There are the finger pickers
towards the end, I think there is, but
really, can we just get back to I found a way. The last lyrics of the song, I'm so glad that they go to the verse again, because when it finishes with a like, but I won't ask too much, even though it already sounds kind of like you're asking too much, but whatever. Mm-hmm. But then it just says it again, like it just keeps going with the I won't ask too much.
Yeah, follow you where he goes. I'll be there just so you know. I need your feet. Oh, I hate that. Yes, I'll be there just so you know. Just so you know.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
But I'm glad that they close it out with "And so the morning came and swept the night away." I think that's a good lyric.
I mean, that's fine. It is. And I agree. Like, there are,
because of where it goes from that to where it's like, there's a little bit of like, it's again, it kind of feels like, "And so the morning came, swept the night away, and now I'm walking and I'm reflecting on."
But let's finish the chorus. And then I was looking for a way to disappear. And then it's just that.
I hate the reappear.
I found a way to reappear. And like, again, amongst the quiet things and all these empty streets, there's that very kind of slant rhyme, right, of things and streets. Mm-hmm. I get, and I like that. And I like the came in a way. That's cool. But on the other side of both of those is disappear, reappear. And there's no, like,
There's something about the positivity that angers me. Where I'm like, oh, reappear. That's like, it ends on a positive note. Where I'm like, no, just be depressing.
And it also just, you're expecting, what's hard, I think, with choruses is that you can expect a certain level of profundity, right? When you get to the kind of the punch of the chorus. And especially if again, if you've got acoustic guitars, if you're like folk singer guy, I'm expecting something. Like they have to be there. And like this is again where like there's like the message we're talking about, but I'm like, what? What is the like, just like take that line, disappear, and it's like, well, just flip it. No, I'm reappeared. I'm good. I found a way. Like, it's just, there's nothing there. I don't know. Bothered me. I'm not angry. I'm just kind of like, I don't know. It's bothered me.
I know what you mean. It's just not as satisfying as, like I said, it just, you feel like the face value of this, like looking at it, it's like, this should be that much better.
Maybe this is okay. I came up with my symbolism of this Colton Saylor listening to this record. Yeah. I walk down a hall. I see a very like, kind of beautiful landscape. It's like, there's a lot about the technique in that that I think is really cool, but it's super crooked. And I walk by and I go, huh, why is it so crooked? why is it so unbelievably poorly put up on that wall?
Okay, so it's a painting. It's a painting. Okay,
and then I walk away. Oh, no. I'm the album. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I thought you were looking out a window. My bad.
Dance to another tune, buddy.
I guess I'm going to say the same thing as I said about To a Poet. I love the way it comes out of the verse into the chorus.
When it literally starts, like when the song switches at the end and it literally is like a different tune. Mm-hmm. I like that. Like there's some cool second half arrangements on this record that I'm into. And I'm like, that's neat. That's inspired.
Yeah. Not the part I was talking about, but yeah, that part is really good.
We're never going to like the same thing on this album, are we?
This album, we may have a different...
That's funny. Yeah,
you're not wrong with the segment you're talking about.
But hit your thing first.
Well, it's just going from... When it hits the, let me see here. Under the sun, all that will happen has already begun. Will you save this in your mind? I like the melody swing on that. Like, that's where I'm victim to this, Colton. Sometimes a vocal melody just grabs me. Yeah, that's just a pretty, like, the way that it's functioning within the chords, hearing that melody go that direction, it's really nice. It's not as good as the part that you were talking about, but, you know, I was given it a chance to breathe.
This is the one where, like, she really opens the vocals up, right? Is that the one I'm thinking of? I got it. Now, you're describing it, and I'm trying to find it real quick. Yeah. Okay. This is a song where this to me is the better Lion's Roar.
Okay.
Like arrangements wise. Like, and again, it makes me go back to Lion's Roar, and I keep thinking, why was she singing that way? Because I should never do it again throughout the record. And I think this is the one where, like, when I think it is Clara. Right.
Yeah. Like, most of the time, if it's going to be the main vocals, it's typically going to be Claire.
When I hear her open up her vocals and get more of that rasp, I think she does it. Maybe it's in this one, and then there's maybe one other after this. I'm trying to remember it. And it's not that hyper delicate like harmony that she's going into with her sister. I'm like, yes, more of that. Like, that's cool.
See, like, I love her like her gentle falsetto.
I mean, that stuff, I think my like, to kind of explain more of the psychology of Colton, I played too many shows with too many people who were going for that, and it was all based in like Iron and Wine or whatever. Like, it's all the Garden State soundtrack that destroyed folk music for a second. Like, it's always going to be a bit of a bugaboo for me because I always associate it with like wanting to appear, you know, profound without any of the actual work to get there. But
I get you. I just respect the ability to do it.
But she's got the pipes, man. Like, yeah, when she does, like, I'm in it.
Honestly, both of them. Dude, they have a performance of them doing War Pigs. So good.
You're going to make me look that up, aren't you? You're going to make me listen to them cover War Pigs.
I mean, it's a live performance. I highly recommend it. It should be playing a little bit in the background. But I actually think it's like a moment where like Joanna is just, I'm like, oh, that's probably the best I've heard her like harmonizing. And she's already a great harmony, but like she's actually a little bit more on the high end. It's just rocking. All and right. It is also when I fell in love with Joanna. Joanna, I love you.
Easy.
You're right.
You need to take it.
She's already like, I don't love you, dude. I've heard the things you've said.
We've got to pump the brakes. We've got to. Are we ready for New Year's Eve? Or do you have any more to say about Dancing to the Tune?
No. New Year's Eve is my least favorite song.
This is my least favorite song.
Yeah.
We did now, it, man.
Is it because of the obvious, the zipper sound?
Oh, it's everything. It's the lyrics.
I'm okay with the like that's what's going to save me like thing. Honestly, it's the fact that I'm pretty sure that they're playing a what is it called, a auto harp.
Mm-hmm.
And an auto harp, for those who don't know how this thing functions, it's a whole bunch of strings on the top, and then there's like buttons you can hold down at the bottom that will mute the strings that are not part of the chord of the button that you're holding down. And so that's what creates that zipper sound. I don't know if you really harped on that auto harp zipper sound like I did, but like, it takes away so much of the emotion to this song to me. Because I just hear zip, zip, zip. And it's unfortunate because the chords, I think, are perfectly fine. But it's just the fact that it's that downstroke. And so all of those muted strings are creating that click sound. And she's raking through a whole bunch of strings. Like the auto harp I've seen is like 36 strings. So that's a lot of muted strings that are creating this zoop sound. Zoop.
This has been, I feel bad because I feel like this is something that has really bugged you. I didn't listen to this album in headphones, so I feel like I was spared
the zip. Oh, yeah. See, you know me. I listen to headphones.
I got them in now, so let me get a taste. Oh, yeah. It's not nice. It's not nice on the ear.
Yeah. It just doesn't relent. To where, like, maybe I'm glad that you're judging this song more from like the actual songwriter. I feel like I was taken out of that. Like, to where when I listen to it, I still think it's fine. I'm not impressed by the chorus that much, but it seems like it'd be so much prettier. I'm like, just go to an acoustic.
That's what's going to save me, I think, is okay. But yeah. Man, when you start a song with it's a new year, with it comes new hope and new fear, I'm out. I'm out so quickly.
I'll be sure at the beginning of 2027 not to send you this song.
It is. And it's Death Cab for Cutie. So this is New Year and I'm feeling different. Like, I'm on record with my holiday. I'm specifically vacation. Yes. I got misinterpreted.
Yeah.
I don't like vacation songs. Yeah. I find them.
But it does feel like it eventually grew into you just don't like holiday songs.
Well, now we listen to enough where I'm like, holiday songs are close. And I have one word that wraps up what bothers me about them as lyricists. Okay. Induces. Is such a weird word to use there. Like, they have no... There's something about this record where the words they use for things, I'm like, where did we go? How did we get to this part? Like, sometimes it just literally doesn't make sense. Like, it was ran through some weird word app and came out. But this one is... met a young man who was in tears. He asked me what induces us to stay here. I said, I don't know much and I'm not lying. But, man, like, it is... Once it's trying to be, I mean, there is no man. We know that, right? It's like a very, like, it's like, walking, I'm seeing people that are symbols of society. We're talking about the new year, but it's kind of weird to me how they're choosing to paint these different scenes. And I think it's, again, just kind of like no control over where they want the song to be lyrically in it. Again, it just really bothers me. It's very similar. I think the way that hits my ear is the zip zip.
the zipper sound. There we go. Yeah, dude, and that bothers me because I feel like there's another lyric off this album that that passed. So I have the ultimate whoopsie of I can't remember where it happens, but I was like, that literally contradicts the previous statement. But you know, it's I feel very fortunate that I don't listen to this album with quite the same strictness on lyrics that you do.
And again, I'm not like listening with a pad of paper and a pen going, oh, that rhyme. It's just literally I'm listening because it's folk music and I'm like, okay, take me away. Lyrically, I'm excited. I want to get that like joy. Yeah. I listen to Waxahachie like all the time. And those records are not like lyrically pristine, but there is an ease and a flow and a total control of language that, man, I could listen to those records and they are very easygoing. Like, and it is not requiring you to have a, you know, master degree and whatever. And and this is just not that. And I'm obviously right, but
and the very intriguing part is one of the best lyricists of all time I can think of is coming right up.
So we got both our worst.
Yeah.
You probably know it by now. This last one is my favorite.
This is my underrated.
I have my conspiracy theory.
No, I don't think he did.
You don't think he wrote the course?
Maybe.
I think he wrote the course.
I'm glad that you said. I feel like there's a lot more of like they were all in it together. But I think it was collaborative.
Let's bring everyone in on in the room. I think we're starting. So Connor Oberst is on this last song.
Yes,
he has writing credits.
King of the World. He does have writing credits.
He does have writing credits, and I do know that from their bio that listening to Bright Eyes made them interested in folk music, which.
It does make sense, but I also wonder if that's kind of like after the fact, or it's like, yeah, I totally listen to Brad. Like, because he's also who got him in contact with.
Very influential.
Yeah, he is very influential, but he's also who got him into contact with Mike Mogus.
That's right.
You know, so this was an opportunity, but the reason for me this is my underrated song as opposed to my favorite song. I also felt bad saying it would be my favorite song, and I do love Emmy Lou more than this song. So, I mean, I will listen to Emmy Lou again, as I've already conveyed to you. I do love that song. I will watch that live performance again and again, and I will send it to you again and again.
I want you to be happy, man. You're one of my favorite people. I just want your happiness.
But I just can't believe that this isn't in their like top place. I can't believe the song is not in there, because the chorus is everything about it. This is probably the most interesting song.
It is this when this song started, I did like a yes, finally. Like this is
yes.
It's loose, it's quick, like, and I love the like kind of accordion thing. Like these lyrics and the vocals, the way they're doing that that like kind of droning.
Yeah.
More of that, man. Like it's not these long, slow, played out dirges that just kind of go nowhere.
It's so
quick, it's a beat.
And with everything we were talking about, like this the people watching, or I guess I was really the one saying it. Like when she's talking about the lady in the truck or the waitress in her car, you know, like having a cigarette and she with this absolute look of fear on her face. You know, but when we looked at each other, she smiled. I'm like, that's kind of more in the pocket of what I like with like this observational. Like, it's so specific to what's occurring at that moment that
it feels more organic, right? It feels like literal observations. Like the song before, where she like comes across the boy who's like, "What induces us to stay here?" Where it's like a bad Kafka play, like. Like, there's something so weirdly composed about those songs. This song is natural. It's bright. It's organic. The melody is interesting. And, man, that chorus, that is a good chorus. That's good,
a really good chorus. Yeah.
A little too good.
Ah, come on. I'm nobody. Oh, man. I can't say you're wrong. But I'm getting their back on this.
Phoebe Bridgers, who I think is an amazing lyricist. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, one of the better lyricists like that are like of like a younger generation putting out records. Yeah. And I remember, I can't remember which track, but it was one where Conor Oberst like said like, oh, you should write about the guy who was murdered at Dodger Stadium. And I remember that line and I'm like, man, that guy, it's just, he's got some, and I'm not trying, what's, I think with sensitive thing I should say out loud is I do think there's something maybe problematic about like female songwriters. And I'm like, this guy wrote this song for them. Like, it is in this situation. What I want to say is I didn't want this to be the one that I like loved the most.
I know,
because of the optics of how that would look, but I cannot deny this is the best song. And I don't even think his verse is that great.
No.
It's like manna in the desert.
There's a little bit of, well, and the coolest thing to me behind the song is actually, this might be a little bit of conjecture. This might be a little more assumptive. It's like, it sounds like it's Claire first verse, Joanna second verse, Connor third verse.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it has that like kind of closer to the album. And I mean, now you got me going into this storm. Like maybe Connor was pulling his punches, but he's just, there is no sexism at work here, everybody. This is just like, he's one of the greatest lyricists I've ever heard.
That, I mean, here's that chorus.
Yeah.
But I just want everyone to, now I wasn't born for anything, wasn't born to say anything. I'm just here now, soon be gone. That's perfect, by the way. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm nobody's baby. I'm everybody's girl. I'm the queen of nothing. I'm the king of the world. Put that shit in the loo. It's good. It is so good. And on this record, like that, it's like the structure of it, right? Like it's the repetition of the opening. And it's like they've done that before. So maybe it is, right, them, where they've definitely played on opposites like that. Not in a way that feels that inspired and that like interesting.
Well, and it's also just like the opposition is all coming into the same. It's like, I'm nothing. Like this is not a thing.
But it's a release at the same time.
Yeah.
It's such I love that. I'm nobody's baby. I'm everybody's girl. Like it's triumphant in a way that is purely lyrical. That's what I love about it.
And then we do get a little spoiled by, come on, the horns. That is so fucking, what's the name of their record label?
I mean, that's Saddle Creek for sure.
Yeah, that's Saddle Creek. Just
was this put out on Saddle Creek? It wasn't.
I don't think it's on Saddle Creek. It was off of, I can get this answer. I can get this answer.
I got it. Wichita. I wanted to say Wichita, but I'm like, that's not how you spell Wichita.
That's not how you spell Wichita. And but I'm going to call it Wichita anyway.
Maybe it is how you spell Wichita. How you spell Wichita?
I don't know. I would add a T. I would add a T.
Keep saying it.
Keep saying it. Email us.
Okay, everybody. That is how you spell Wichita.
So it's Wichita.
It's Wichita. Right. Wichita. What's going on? Monday night.
Monday night. You know what? I feel we have gotten through this album. We have said a lot about this album even before we started talking about the album.
We are ready for our third segment, and I have the album, by the way. I know what we're doing next.
That was gonna be, do I know it?
I hope so.
Uh-oh. All right, that's how I thought about this one, so let's find out, everybody. Oddly enough, we're going to go into our commercial break where they're going to talk about Bedroom Radio, which I am fucking missing right now for this podcast.
Bummer, man.
It is kind of a bummer. I had to deal with, no, all right, it was fine.
See you, Blamely.
DJ Brood is happy to bring you a proper session of music listening at the beginning of every week on Twitch. With rotating themes showcasing new music, hits of the past, and specific genres, there is most definitely something for everyone to enjoy. Tune in every Monday from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time as he broadcasts nothing but musical goodness live from the comfort of his home to the comfort of yours. Bedroom Radio, where there are no Monday blues, just Monday vibes. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Dango, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast.
Yo,
Good Lord. Welcome back, everyone. We are still kicking ourselves about a certain word we mispronounced. And that's okay. We're going to do better.
That's right. We're going to study city names and make sure we never get them wrong.
I think it's Wichita. Yeah, I think that's
Wichita.
Oh, man. So
Wichita, Kansas.
So we are going to give our out of five score for this album.
I will give the rating that I had. I had walking into this, it was 3.5. It was a 3.5. I still very much so enjoyed it. I still think it's a good album. I may offend you a little bit because I said the format was a 3. So
that's fair.
We got more than dog problems based off of me giving 3.5.
Here's the thing. That episode recording with you was great because I already had my suspicions about that record going into it. I still found things about it that I liked coming out, which is nice.
Same.
But it is not.
Remember,
I
was at a 2.
What did I give it? I gave it a
3. Something. I think maybe a 3.7. I'm going to say a 3.7.
I'm going to do something I've never done before, and it kind of makes me a little queasy. I'm going to do this from the lens of a consumer. If Ooh. You are interested in a record, okay, I don't know, even doing it, I feel weird. But here's the thing. I think there is enough to recommend here if you are looking for a vibe. If this is like a vibes only record to me, this is, and like I said, when I had this record on in the background, the lyrics, like, this is like, you know, soundtrack to a TV show during a dramatic monologue. Like, there's something about it. As
pretty sure that has happened, like, with songs off of this album.
I'm sure. Yeah. Background music vibes that feels like an insult when I say it. And I just don't know how else to say that's the only way I enjoyed this album, like in a just pure listening, like out in the world thing. But and there are records like that, like, weirdly enough, I think, like, the War on Drugs is another band where if I'm doing something else and I'm listening to the War on Drugs, I'm having a good time. And there are times where I'm having a good time just listening to them. But if I'm just sitting down going, okay, War on Drugs, let's go, let's do this, you and me. After like 2 songs, I'm like, what's going on? What are we doing?
Yeah, I get you. There are certain albums where it's like, if I just lay down, I'm having the headphones in and I'm just laying there soaking it in, it better be something.
It's vibes heavy. So that all said, I'll give it a 2.5 because I think there's enough about the arrangements. There's enough about the vocal performances that I think are, like, very masterful, like very, very good job. There's little to nothing for me on the lyric side or on even on the melody side for the most part. Like, that I think kind of it hamstrings it for me. And again, in a genre that is so dependent on that, right? To give, like, the whole point of that genre is musically, you're not going to be giving a lot of curveballs, a lot to really. And so, anywho, 2.5, it feels very down, literally down the middle.
That's all right. And I can understand, especially, like, given their association with other artists that I know you're very fond of as well, and I am as well. It's
the Saddle Creek thing. I know they're not on the record label, but that's a bit of a head scratcher. Like, even with Mike Mogus, like, I wouldn't even say this is a Mike Mogus record. Like, listening to it, I didn't make that connection until I saw it after.
Well, I know Conor Oberst fell in love with them when they did a live performance, and I actually think that's more the proper setting to soak them in.
That makes sense. It does.
Because they do. There's, like, their voices together. It's like, yeah, dude, I could picture being in an emptied out house with all these acoustics and those two singing together is probably very moving. Hmm. And all of a sudden the lyrics are not necessarily the most important thing to kind of, like, zero in on.
Well, that's what it is, everybody. Go see this band live and enjoy. Yeah. I think that's the way to go.
Or go on YouTube and watch Emmylou live or War Pigs live.
I am going to look that up. I'm very interested. So here's the thing, buddy. And I know what you tried to do, and I really appreciate you. You said, I'm going to find a folk album that Colton's going to like. And I really appreciate
it. I was just trying to upset you.
I see you, and I see who you are, and I love your beautiful soul. But you know where I am right now? I want to bring the heavy.
All right.
We're bringing the heavy. I think this is the heaviest band. In fact, I'll say this. This is the first band I think we've covered That is screaming.
Screaming. Okay.
Like, we are screaming. I guess Maynard too old.
I was going to say it's definitely not the case. I mean, Jeff Rickley screams. I mean, okay. Okay.
Jeff Rickley.
Okay.
I think what I still stand by what I said, and I think you will get it when I, okay. I do not know how much you're into this band. I'm going to say words, just words, single words off of song titles. Okay. Bartender. I'm going through the track listing, actually. So number one has the word bartender.
Okay. And it's not T-Pain.
Two, Empire.
Okay, Bartender, Empire.
Three, Cosmopolitan.
you wouldn't do that to me, so it's...
I would not. And that would be two. Yeah. Oh, no, that would be nine. four, Ape.
Can I ask a question on this?
Yes, you can.
What time frame are they roughly from?
I'll go even one further. I'll give you the year. This came out 2002.
Oh, 2002.
And just to be kind, it is a post-hardcore record. Seen as one of the great post-hardcore records.
Have I ever said that I think this is one of the best band names I've ever heard?
Possible. It might have been. Yeah, it's over. You can bet in mid-October I would still be renting.
That is not how his voice sounds. May. That is not how his voice sounds. We're doing Glassjaw?
Doing Glassjaw.
Okay.
Worship and Tribute.
Worship and Tribute. I do like Glassjaw, but I have not really gotten
it. I didn't think so, because I was thinking, how much have I talked with Rob about Glassjaw? And I don't think a lot. And there was a period of time after this record where they were just kind of playing shows and kept teasing and teasing a new album that kind of never came out, and it eventually did. I'm not interested in those, and I'm not interested in the first album. This album, though, is, I remember this as being like a thing for me. This record was and it didn't awaken a post-hardcore Colton, but
yeah. No, but I'm not joking. I think that's one of my favorite band names. Like Glassjaw, I always just like, that's a great band name.
And for the music they play, like everything about it just sinks in. It's, man.
So no, that's going to be really fun. And this will be fun for me because I never gave it that much time a day. That's because Colton probably suggested it to me. And I went, you know what? I've tried too, buddy. I'm not listening.
I refuse. Oh. Well,
not until you listen to First Aid Kit while I listen to Glassjaw, and now we finally, here we are.
So here's the beautiful tapestry of diversity that is our show, where we talked about First Aid Kit. Next episode we're going to dive into D'Angelo Untitled.
That's right.
And then after that we're hitting Glassjaw,
and I have our new music song for the D'Angelo. Man,
we are just a beautiful symbol of these beautiful United States and Sweden also. Yeah.
And hopefully you guys appreciated us on a Monday, because the next episode has to be on a Monday too.
Buckle up, everyone.
We're doing a write a record challenge, so the weekend's going to be eaten up.
Buckle up.
Buckle
All right,
up.
Buddy. Thank you. I love you.
Thank you. I love you as well. And I love the listener.
Oh, yeah. You all too.
All of them. I like to think I bounced back up to a 2% chance. Dun, 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 dun.